Welcome to the Group Podcast by Cineasters Guild with HR4K and Contact Coffee.
Right, we're recording. Yeah, this is just a general chat, mate, to catch up because we haven't spoken. Okay, right, we're here. It's me and Ben. We are recording this on Thursday evening because everyone's busy. And the only way, we've done a few with me and Luke, and the only way we can get me and Ben is to get Ben after he's finished building his empire in the daytime. We haven't really got, and eating, obviously. We haven't really got a topic. We're just going to have a catch up. I'm sure we'll go somewhere. Yeah. So how are you? Are you okay? Beard's looking good.
Yeah, good, mate. Yeah. Yeah, it's good, actually. I was talking about this to my missus, actually, and just saying how we've missed this last week. So, obviously, what we do is quite public, but it's good to catch up with your mates. It's good to check in, see if everyone's all right, you know, and let off a little bit of steam, talk to people that aren't, you're not necessarily mixing with every day of the other week. So, it's good, yeah. It's good to see you again. It's good to catch up, mate.
Shame you mixed with me. Oh, there it is. WhatsApp group's been quiet, hasn't it? Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
Everyone's been busy. But yeah.
Well, we're on a bit of a turn, aren't we? If you look at me, for us, you know, we're gearing up for Monday for the boot camp. We've been grafting like anything to get Hereford squared away. You know, guys been up to Colchester getting that sorted out. Mm-hmm. And planning, lots of planning to make sure we've got stuff ready to go to sustain us coming forward. Mm-hmm. And this isn't necessarily, you know, trying to turn a coin, but, you know, this is trying to get people involved back in what we're doing, build those communities, get people back out, something for people to look forward to. Yeah. And that takes planning. You know, it takes a lot of working parts, a lot of moving parts. So, yeah, it's been busy, mate. I mean, I know Luke and Nick have been digging out blind with their new venture in the I don't think we're allowed to say it yet.
No, we are. Yeah, it's open. Okay. It's McCarthy Glen in Cannock. Yeah, you're allowed to say it now.
Okay, cool. So yeah, they've been grafting on that. You know, and you're going through the same shit as I am, making sure your stock levels and products in, products out, same issues with suppliers.
Yeah.
It's good though, you know.
It's not shit busy, is it? It's good to be busy. There's people who aren't busy, but it's I think it's you're probably more busy because your thing is a physical thing and you've been rebuilding something. I basically come into the office and I'm just spinning plates of emails and editing and, you know, whatever I'm doing, but it's not physical get up in the morning, graft all day, get dirty type stuff. You know what I mean?
I mean, a lot of that's been down to, because of furlough, staff been on furloughed, limited getting people in to do, but a lot of it's been done by myself and, you know, favours and people helping out. So
yeah, it's been some favours.
Full on hands on, you know, but what's kind of cool though is the messages and the responses we've been getting, where people were also seeing like a light at the end of the tunnel, you know, something to look forward to. And I'm hoping, you know, we're part of that, you know, they obviously people got their own lives and many other things, but, you know, we want to be a destinations that people can look forward to, events people can do. You know, we're lucky. When you look at, say, Instagram or Facebook, our numbers aren't great. We know they're not big numbers, but we know every single one of them is following us because they want to be involved. Yep. You know, it's not clickbait. They want to be involved. So the feedback is really good from what we've been getting. So hopefully we're going to give something for people to look forward to, which is mega.
Yeah, but it's momentum as well, isn't it? So when because you're a physical destination, you're part of people's sort of movement habits. So people might be going to work and they might pop in and get a brew. They might be coming home from work. They might want to go and train or whatever. And it's building that momentum again of getting people, you know, oh yeah, we are fucking here. You can come back here, and just getting that going again. Because I think there must be loads of people in that same situation.
Well, I'm hoping when we're doing the boot camp stuff, because we're going to make the most of those few days. Really excited. Tomorrow, we're getting the delivery of all the road kit into the gym here. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a long slog for those guys tomorrow. And then we've got the boot camp starting Monday. I'm excited because it's a chance for a lot of people to get together legally, mm-hmm. get together, do something positive.
Yeah.
You know, we're not looking for prima donnas and, you know, Johnny Bravo types. I just want, you know, I want Joe Bloggs. I want, you know, wives, girlfriends, mothers, grandmothers.
Totally.
You know, I want good people here. And that's what we're all about, you know, good people coming in. So I'm really excited about that. I'm excited to share the work that the team's done with them. And then hopefully they'll see, you know, how impressive it is.
It's mega. Yes, so. I think it's awesome. You just showed me a little tour. It looks great. But it's those people you've got the right idea there, because those people are more important than the people who think they're going to go to the CrossFit Games or whatever. They're those people. Like, fine, train. But I'd be more... You're going to get more out of the person who comes in for a brew, older person maybe, comes in for a brew, sees you've got the training gear there and asks about that, and then maybe comes down and starts getting the mobility sorted again. You know, maybe they can't, sounds silly, but maybe they can't just do a normal squat. Maybe they've lost that mobility. Maybe they can't pick their grandkids up and play with their grandkids as much as they used to. You know what I mean? They're the people... You're going to get more satisfaction out of helping, you know, and that's all it'll be, because you create environments that people feel comfortable in. So they will, instead of just ignoring what's going on in the corner, they're used to coming in, they're comfortable having a laugh, having a brew, and they might go, can I just jump in on that? And you say, you know what I mean? It's awesome. You've got to do the whole package.
We're going to do a Young Guns. Okay. Which would be kind of cool, you know, for kids and stuff. So
yeah.
I'm excited about that. So yeah, like we've got the old, you know, more mature, if you like, and then obviously the young and stuff. But that means that obviously parents and they can enjoy that with their kids. Mm-hmm. Definitely about the old thing. I mean, I trying to drag my dad down as well, which is good. He's unfortunately had a few issues recently. Mm-hmm. But he's getting over that. But obviously what we need to do is keep him active. And he is naturally a very active person, but obviously can't do some of the stuff that he wanted to do before. So obviously keeping him active, obviously helps with releasing endorphins, makes you happier,
totally.
All that sort of bits and pieces, and gives you somewhere to go and enjoy. So, and also I get to enjoy it with him, which is mega important as well. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, community and relationships. I mean, the thing about Fizz is people who've, like, obviously your dad's physical background in the past, but people who have never really done Fizz, but you might get all the way through and they're one of those people who maybe didn't put weight on, they were just lucky, go all the way through life and just felt like they were okay and then start to notice niggles. If you haven't had that experience of physical fitness and training being part of your life, you don't know that it has to hurt to feel good. If you know what I mean? Initial, this is fucking shit, that we all feel, all of us, we all go, this is fucking shit. But actually, yeah, you do get the endorphins, you do feel better, and you see the progress. You're like, I start to feel okay. You know, if like, depression's probably too much of a strong word, but definitely, if you start to feel down in the dumps a little bit, physical fitness or training is one of the things that can help you get out of it. It's not a cure.
Yeah, quite agree.
But you know, I notice it. If I don't train, I stop feeling like myself. Obviously, I'm brainwashed like you are. But, you know, I stop feeling like myself. I don't feel like Gaz, like I'm supposed to be in reasonable shape. I shouldn't get out of breath going up the stairs.
But you need it, the realization. You know, like my old man, so Hobie's not listening to this and he thinks of bashing him. But my old man, you know, he did peak on me at the age of 38, 39, you know. Okay. Was still doing lots of bits and pieces. He's still incredibly active, as I said, prior to these recent events. Mm-hmm. Is slim, looks healthy, you know, but is very aware that he's unable to do the things that he did before. Mm-hmm. And you take a lot of that for granted, that you can't do these things you did before. However, you know, you join a gym or you join a club like this, then you know your limitations, you know what you can do, you still feel good. And, you know, we talked about, you know, you're hitting your PBs, you know, your new your PBs are changing. You have to change because of your abilities or what you can and can't do.
Yeah.
You can now hit new PBs. And even if that new PB is the classic, you know, couch to 5K, that's a PB. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
You know, what you see, bar folks who are suffering from an illness, what you see is people degrade because they're not active.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they think, oh, well, I was in the military, I was fit as fuck, you know, and I've still got it. You haven't, because now you're sitting in front of the TV.
Yeah.
You know, I was speaking to a couple of friends of mine who are lorry drivers. They left the military, they're now lorry drivers.
Spent Lee a lot Bartley. Of time. Lee Bartley's, you remember Lee Bartley?
Yeah, yeah, top bloke. Yeah, yeah, obviously.
Perfect example. He's a fat bloke now.
Yeah. So, but a lot of guys that. Yeah. Do you know what? He got B Company champion, he did.
I know he did. That's what's funny about it.
but the thing is, so there's a couple of issues there with that. Obviously, there's not, you know, everyone has their own varying issues. But, you know, for a couple of guys I was talking to recently who are lorry drivers or, you know, they heavy goods drivers, they spend a lot of time out on the road. They're eating between meals.
Yeah.
They're not burning off the calories, and they've got a lot of time to think.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully they'll be listening to this podcast and enjoying this, but they've got a lot of time to think. And when you have a lot of time, sometimes you overthink things, you kind of delve into the weeds too much. And then obviously you start thinking about the fact that you're not being as active, which obviously becomes a catch-22 situation. So kind of like, we want to sort of, these guys are all in my peer group. They're, you know, our peer group, you know, our age bracket. And I want to sort of kind of get those guys in when they've got time off to come and, you know, burn off some calories, release those endorphins and share and talk and, you know, get amongst other people. So because obviously their career choice or where they've gone into is somewhat solitary.
Well, it's hard. It's also very, very, very difficult to stay fit in that job because you do incredibly long hours. And like you say,
they work hard, mate.
That is true. I should have been a bit mean to Lee there. That's right. If I ever see him again, he'd probably punch me. But yeah, it's a fucking difficult job. Like I sit down all day now, pretty much. And I noticed that. I've had to try and get to do something to try and keep on top of things because I'm not. My life has changed.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to it, but selfishly, I'm doing it for myself. You know, I want something to look forward to. You know, I've got the kids and everything else, but I want, you know, something else, you know, something in the day, a bit of routine, you know, head down, do some fears, shoot the shit with people I want to hang around with, you know, and feel good about myself and them. And, you know, I mean, it's kind of cool, you know, and that's what it's all about. You know, we're not looking at big numbers either. I think we want to max out at probably around 60 for the gym, 30 initially in the first 6 months to a year. We're not trying to take over the world here. We just want to create something kind of cool, you know.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what we are doing. This is going to be mega. So we've got the Murph coming up for Memorial Day on May 31st.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to, and I hope if anyone's listening to this that they want to join in, we're gonna do two events, one in Colchester, where we're going to try and get loads of people from the brigade and anyone else who lives around Colchester that follows you and us, get them involved and do a Murph up at Colchester. And then I want them to also, anyone who lives in this local area, to come down here on Memorial Day at some point, whatever suits them, and do a Murph here. We're going to give away some Yeti stuff, which is mega. Some big prizes from Yeti, actually, to one at each location. But I just think it'd be something really cool. We want to build it up over 2 months. We've got 2 months before it happens. Yeah. You know, something that people can come down, come and train, get a vest on, or even do it without a vest. And I'm kind of thinking, Murph's a big fucking challenge. You know, Murph, you think, oh my God, it's fucking massive. But actually, let's build you up now for 2 months. And then on the day, you know, you're building up to it, and then on the day you just pull out your best. But you're sharing the pain with everyone else, so you know, it's not like it's not an individual effort. It's an individual effort, but you're doing it with friends, you know. So that's kind of what we're planning for the next 2 months. Is a Murph challenge on Memorial Day, and then hopefully people can do it in memory of anyone that they they feel deserves it, you know.
Well, that's a CrossFit thing anyway, isn't it? Of you're only really challenging yourself. Now, you're not meant to look left and right, unless you're in the games, you're not meant to look left and right. You're supposed to go in and just do your best, and that's kind of it. And that's, it's one of the things they got very, very right, I think. There is no, yeah, I'm better than you. It's like, let's all work, let's do what we can. Well, I'm fucked now, so I'm probably going to have to do that now, aren't I?
Yeah, you are, yeah. So I was kind of I didn't know you were going to throw this CrossFit thing in, but yeah, I was hoping you'd go, oh yeah, what a good idea, Ben. Yeah, okay.
yeah.
Well, so yeah. Here would be nice if you could come down on May the 31st. It'd be nice if you get Luke down as well.
Okay.
Come down May the 31st, bring a vest.
Roger.
And,
I need to do my pull-ups then, don't I? Fuck's sake. I can do the rest of it now, Jarvis. I just need to do pull-ups.
If you can't do those things, what we'll do is we'll scale it. You know, if people can't do certain things, I mean, I know I've pulled my shoulder quite badly a couple of years ago on the Spartan races, and I'm still suffering with it, and that's just comes with age and everything else. And then I'll show off in front of my kid on a skateboard and fell on my right elbow. So
I'm was that the obvious features, fucking... One wheel?
No.
Did you have a go at that? Was any good? Head,
one wheel.
Yeah.
Well, there's a guy called Scott Allen who runs a company up in Scotland. And he said, oh, I sell them. You fancy one? And I was like, no, they are a death trap.
You know to be fair to him, Christian Craighead, and I've got a picture he posted the other day, he looked pretty uncomfortable, I thought. He didn't look comfortable on that fucking thing.
Well, I wonder how many takes that took of Michael taking a picture of him going backwards and forwards past the and then obviously it was like, oh, you can still see my face. Do another picture.
Yeah, fucking hell.
No, it's good. It's good to spend time with him. Actually. Yeah. No, it'd be cool. Yeah, it'd be cool if you and anyone else who's listening come down to either HL4K Hereford or hopefully Colchester. Then
2 months is enough, isn't it? 2 months is enough.
2 months, yeah. Just enjoy it, and then we'll probably finish. Depending on what time, we'll probably put a bit of a barbecue on, I think.
Well, yeah.
You know, make the most of it. Make a bit of a day of it. You know.
Cool. Well, I'll stick it on the old Discord group, and we'll get my little group of nutters on there involved, and they'll love that. I told you, man, it's all they fucking talk about is when's Ben going to open and have something we can come down to. So if they have to do a Murph, you know, to do it, that's a double win, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think it's the only thing we're going to be able to do as it's part. We can do it as outdoor fitness. Now we've got the Beaverfit rigs outside. Yeah, yeah. It's something that I think we can do and get away with, you know, without kind of dropping ourselves in the shit.
Yeah.
Which we don't want to do because obviously there's still... there's still, you know, we got to screw the nut, you know.
Yeah, run away out, but yeah, it's we do need to not take the piss.
No, so what have you been up to? I've been all about me. What have you been up to, mate?
What have I been up to? General work, mate, to be honest. I mean, we're looking work-wise, not that much. Ticking over. Yeah, literally just ticking over. Trying to get the stock in. So we got guys running the Facebook ads now, which are working. So, yeah, the problem you've got is trying to keep stocking, which is a fine problem.
It's not a bad problem to have, is it?
Nah, but it just means I have to be organised, you know. It's just my endless battle with...
How's the house hunting going?
Oh, mate. So, yeah, not bad. Not bad. So we spent the last 2 weekends up in Blackpool doing that business. It's okay. I'm just looking forward to it. We're still waiting for the mortgage buyers to come back and tell us how much we could actually have. You know what it's like if you're a director of a company, your finances look weird anyway because they're tax efficient. But we see what comes back, see what he says we can have, and then we'll either wait out a little bit longer because there's potentially some funds coming towards the end of the year. We'll either wait out for that and move then, or if he gives a green light a bit early with a decent amount of cash, then we'll go. I go tomorrow, mate. I'm licked with this place. Kills me. Yeah. But it depends on how we do it. I may end up moving back into the house for a bit. If we do it later in the year, because I've got a 1-year lease on the office I'm in now, And if I can't negotiate like a 3 or 6 month extension to that, then I'll just have to bid it until we move, and I'll be back in the house with the dogs, which would be mega, wouldn't it? That'd be good for the podcasts. Yeah. I'll have to start going out for walks to do the podcast or something. I'll have to do something.
What about the office? What's going on with that?
What, this? Oh, you mean when I move? I do have the house. Yeah, I'm pretty much sold on the whole decentralized working thing. The more I look into it, the more I like it. So at least in the short term, the idea is to get a big enough house that there is an area where I can have as the office, and I'll just work out the house. You know, the only issue we have at the moment is that my house is pretty much open plan. There's only two doors in the house, and that's on my missus' bedroom and my bedroom. The people who don't know that we sleep in separate rooms, we go, what? That doesn't make any sense. But yeah, so the dot, we've got no way.
Because you're an animal.
Well,
she needs to separate herself from you every now and again.
Well, kind of, but mainly because I'm fucking annoying, apparently. So I'll sleep in a separate room so she can actually sleep. But yeah, the idea is that I'll run it out of the house, and I'll have a study office type thing, and then we'll, because we don't have kids, we're not having kids. One of the bedrooms will probably become like the podcasty type whatever place.
Obviously this is happening across the world now, isn't it, really? You know, people looking up, and there's always a need to get out, socialize, and you know, you need to spend some time with other people, and I think that's still massively important. I think be looking forward to like pubs opening and you know, other sort of social kind of bits and pieces for people to go and enjoy. I think working from home, obviously there's so many pros and cons, and certainly some cons with actually productivity, depending on who you are and what sort of person you are.
Yeah.
I know productivity for me, if I worked at home, wouldn't be ideal because I'd be easily distracted. You know, red tube, something like that. But then at work, I'm easily distracted as well, because obviously people come in and I don't know, you know. So,
but that's kind of part of your job, isn't it? It's like, as we move forward in this, you've got to try and really find what it is you're good at and do those bits. Like, as soon as we can afford it, I will palm this off to somebody. The actual running of the day-to-day company, I will palm off on someone because they will do it better than me. And all I will do is be head of brand and community. That's what I do, because that's what I'm good at. It's what I understand. So yeah. It's a pain in the ass because you have to go into a building and people want to see you and talk to you. But that's part of
I don't know about that. I think sometimes people are a bit gutted when I come around the corner and go, oh mate, I knew I came in for a quiet brew. now the duty the duty boring bloke comes around and starts chewing my ear.
There is a host aspect to your job, I think.
Yeah, there is a certain amount. I was talking to one of the lads who came in yesterday with his missus. Kind of cool. They came away from Cheltenham, and we were talking about that. And that it's one of those fine lines where you need work done. Now we've separated it. You know, we've got two very distinct areas where you can separate. You know, we've had to do that, but that's work. But you know, the whole point is, you know, this is about, you know, people come in and feeling very welcome, and that's important. And if the staff aren't here to do it, then that has to be me. So you and I spoke late last week about a topic.
Yes.
Obviously, we're going to a bit of a curveball for anyone who's still listening. but I think it's an interesting topic, and I don't want to get too melancholy about it. For a number of reasons, because it's not helpful. But the topic I want to talk about was loss.
Yeah. And
losing someone or people you know are close to. And I don't know what the demographic of your listeners are our age group, you know, they're from our age group. So we're all kind of going through a very similar situation based on the natural circles of life, if you like. When we were younger, when we were in the reg, right, it was almost the done thing to do a mum joke or a dad joke. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Your mum, it was always, I remember there's a guy, I won't say his name on the phone because he's gone somewhere now. I remember when he was a brand new Tom, I tried giving him a bit of shit in front of everyone. And he turned around and said, "That's what your mum said last time I shaved her back." And it absolutely devastated me in front of everyone because I had no, where's the comeback on that?
Yeah,
I mean, I was actually massively impressed. I now use it as my go-to. And so mum jokes are always, everything, "That's what your mum said." Or someone says, "That's what your mum said. That's what your mum said last time I was," or whatever. Yeah. And then blokes love to take it a little bit further. "And that's what your dad said the last time I was," and it's just like, oh.
Yeah, there's no line with the blokes. There's no line.
And then it gets to a stage in your life where you've got to ask the question, Well, you don't even do that. You hesitate a mum joke. You know there's a perfect opportunity for a mum joke. Yeah. And you're about to kick in with a mum joke. And then you've got to now pause because you're at that stage in your life where there's a good chance that person's mum or dad may have passed away.
Yeah.
So you don't want to offend. Now, I've got a good friend of mine called Tom Blakey, which quite a few people probably follow. You will know Tom Blakey. He's an amazing bloke. And he does a lot of really good stuff without people knowing about it. And you've got to take your hat off to him. A lot of really good stuff that he doesn't publicize. And, but I used to do, he was the ultimate mum joke, ultimate dad joke bloke. And I went and did a dad joke or a mum joke on him. And he said, "Oh, my mum's passed away." And I kind of laughed it off, seriously. And I was like, "Mate, I'm so sorry. I apologize." He said, "No, it's cool. If I'm going to give you a mum joke, I've got to accept a mum joke in return."
Yeah,
and I was like, okay, so that's where you obviously you're separating the actual the actual person who is your mum to actually
the concept of mum.
Yeah, the concept of mum.
Yeah,
it's interesting. I read recently that a friend of mine died, a family friend, in fact, and a friend of mine, a bloke called Tom Pollock. Tom is an absolute legend. For anyone who doesn't know, Tom Pollock was originally from Eastern Europe, and he came over to study to be a doctor. And while he was at university, he joined 10 para or 4 para. I think it was 10 para. Mm-hmm. And he joined one of the two. So he joined one of the reservist units, and he loved it so much that he then decided to join the reg. Right. So he finished medical school as a doctor and then joined the reg as a Tom.
That's hilarious.
He went on selection. He held the record for endurance for a best part of a decade, I believe. Fair. Well known. Actually was badged. And then unfortunately, due to his security clearance, especially within the 80s, he was told that he couldn't serve in the SAS. Obviously, massively devastated, went back to 3 para. He was involved in, there was an RTA or an accident of some kind, and he's there putting lines in, speaking Latin, all this sort of stuff. And, the head should come over and go, "What are you doing? What the hell are you doing?" And he was like, "Well, actually, I'm a qualified doctor." So they shat themselves that there's a reg bloke who's a qualified doctor in the ranks. And I think after that, he went off and worked for, I can't remember if it was the Omanis or one of the, somewhere in the Middle East.
Yeah.
And then he came back eventually to the REMC.
Right.
Joined 23 PFA, which is the airborne side. I think came back as a captain or a major. Mm-hmm. And then him and my old man, they started a thing called the Black Serpent, which is the SF med support thing that they do. So it's amazing. It's really come on leaps and bounds. And they started that back in like the 90s. Now, this guy was an absolute legend. Like he was then the doctor. I think he was the oldest person to still be parachuting in the army. It was only up until a few years ago. Yeah. I remember being on tour with him, which he was mega out on there. He was an absolute bloke's bloke. of a doctor. He loved being with the men. Yeah, he loved being with the blokes. And if you needed something, you know, in the med centre, if you needed something, he looked after you because he knew you were an adult. You know, he treated you like an adult. He knew you're a professional soldier and treated you like that. I believe he used to have a pub. And my old man used to say that he'd sort of fuck off halfway through the week and then go and run his pub, as well as like he had a building company as well and a few other things. He was just an amazing, interesting person. And he's still doing kind of fell running and all kinds of stuff up until recently. Now, unfortunately, he was ill. He became quite ill. A couple of times he'd been ill. Okay. And then he passed away on 15th of March. So, you know, these things to us now are happening more and more frequent based on our age and our community that we have around us. And it's how we deal with that and how we reflect on these individuals. And as you heard from me there, I have a lot of love for this man. You know, I is an amazing person, looked after me absolutely amazingly. Always had time for me and my old man and anyone else I knew. And although we weren't close, you know, certainly the last few years, you know, it's still someone who had an impression on your life. And how do you deal with that? How do you cope with that? And I suppose it's still that realization that this is life, isn't it? You know, this is, you know, these people come into your life, you try and make the most of that time you have with them, if you can remember. You look at grandparents and especially at our age, we always think, I wish I'd spent more time with my grandparents. Well, bullshit, because when you're young, I want to be on the piss. I want to be out going to gigs. I want to be chasing girls. I want to be, you know, this is life. Life isn't that you want to spend every waking moment with these people because you've got your own lives to live. So,
and they have their own lives too.
Of course they do,
You know what I mean? Part of the... You know, it may not be grandparents, but certainly with your parents, once you're 18 or 21 or whatever, once you start making your own life, they expect you to come and visit. They don't expect you to be there constantly because it's a release so they can, with the best will in the world, they want you to fuck off so they can get back to having their own lives because they've been raising you for 20 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So,
but some people, you know, that's pretty much, you know, most of their life, you know, as in some people, certainly people when, you know, you look at guys and girls who got together in their teens and, you know, then had kids. They've never really got to have their, you know, their time for some of them. I'd be interested to have any feedback off the guys and girls that are listening and just see how they're dealing, how that sort of loss has affected them. You know, and I'm talking about, you know, circle of life loss. I'm not talking about immediate loss that would happen on tour. I think we've talked about that and other people have talked about that before. I think it's just an interesting topic to talk about within our demographic, our age group, because this is the time it sort of happens and those changes happen. I mean, you know, you, if you don't mind me talking about yourself, you comprehended the loss of your dad very well because you understood what the build up to that was and you prepared yourself for that, didn't you?
Well, the thing is, not really, because I only found out he had cancer 3 weeks before he died.
Oh, really? I'm sorry, I thought it was.
No. So, well, we might as well talk about this now, right? So I think I spoke about it on one of the solo podcasts I did, but just me. So the way it worked was I hadn't spoken to him for about 10 months prior to him dying. We had a fallout over what I assumed at the time was just him being a dick. So we had like a proper fall. So to go back even further, so in 2015, I had a proper fallout with him and I didn't speak to him for a year. Just like, because we're both about each other, we just didn't cross paths for a year. It was easy just to stay out of the way. And at the time, again, I thought it was because he was being a dick. The only thing that made me see him again, or him come and see me, was the fact that me and Katie got married and we managed to get him to the wedding. But I didn't know at the time that's when he was diagnosed with cancer. So basically, my dad died of prostate cancer that went into his spine and fucking everywhere. So for the next, I don't know, 4 years after that, everything was fine. But he seemed to be going downhill. He didn't tell anybody. He only his wife knew. None of us knew. So he was just turning from this guy that I knew. So, yeah, he's a bigger guy than me, always been fit all his life, very sort of strong, fit guy. Just having a decline and just not really doing anything, you know, losing his fitness, seeming to be lazy, not being interested in anything, just watching the TV all day because he'd retired, because we didn't know, because of the cancer, he'd retired. And he was making up all these illnesses that he had. So I had a thing in his leg, and then he had an ulcer and all this stuff. And I'm getting pissed off at him because I'm looking at him going, why have you just turned into a lazy fuck? You know, we need to get down to the gym. And I'm trying to get him to come to the gym, trying to get him to do whatever. Anyway, that goes off about 4 years or so. And in that time, he's told he's got the all clear, and then he comes back. So yeah, then we had another fallout. And then we had 10 months where we didn't speak. Then after those 10 months, it just happened that me and my brother went round to see him, because everyone was isolating during that time, obviously. And we thought he was isolating because of his age or whatever. And actually the guy's isolating because he's piling in with cancer and he's having treatments every other day to try and square it away. The last time I saw him was at the other end of his front garden. So he came to the door. Me and my brother came to like the end of the entry and just had a chat. Whether he knew that was the last time we were going to see him or not, I don't know. But I certainly didn't know it was the last time. But I didn't know he had cancer at that point still. 3 weeks later, with me trying to just get on with life or whatever, I get a text. In fact, I get added. It's fucking funny. Me and my brother get added to a WhatsApp group called Sons. And on there is me, my dad, and Nick. And it comes up and it's like, dad typing. And I text Nick, my brother, and he's like, I said, what's going on here? This looks not, what? This is suspicious. What's happening? And after a while, it just comes through. And it's like, just got to tell you, I've got cancer. And we're like, oh, okay. And then suddenly it all makes sense why this big, strong guy has completely degraded to the point where he's basically just like, looks like he's made of dust. And he's just skin and bone, pretty much. Now, you then go through the, are you on a clock? You know, we're on a clock now. You know, why have you told us? Have you found out there's a problem? Apparently, he said that he told us because his missus couldn't take the strain of not telling anyone anymore. So, yeah, we then have a couple of weeks or 3 weeks where we're trying to see him. Because he's having his treatments or whatever, and we're trying to see him, and he won't let us see him. So at that point, I'm thinking, this is not looking good. Why would he let us go and see him? And then, 3 weeks later, I get a phone call off my brother, Nick, that he's had a phone call off my other brother, Liam, saying he needs to get down, because they live in Wallasey, where the family's from. I obviously live an hour and a half away. So he's like, you need to get down, because dad's gone into hospital, it's not looking good. And like, right, okay, great. And then literally 5 minutes later, Nick rings and says, yeah, he's gone. So I could, a different person, like I am very lucky in that I'm annoyingly logical, annoyingly rational, and have a certain view of death. So if I was somebody different, the fact that I didn't speak to my dad on and off with him for 5 years, maybe. And I didn't speak to him for the last 10 months before he died. And all that time, he knows he's dying of cancer. All that time, he knows. And he's saying, can you do this for me? Can you do that for me? And I'm saying no, because I think he's being a dick. And I mean, I'll be honest about the last bit. So The reason I fell out with him the last time was because there was an issue about money, about me and Katie's wedding that hadn't been resolved. And he'd given us some money. And it was never meant to be a loan or anything like that. It was just, here's some money. And I was like, okay, fine. And he rang me up randomly one day and said, I need that money back now. And I was like, okay, where am I going to get 10 grand from right now? I can't just take that out of the business. That's not a thing. And he's like, well, I need it. You need to give it to me. And because I don't know anything, I don't know he's in shit state. I'm like, no, that's unreasonable. You know, I can, why have you suddenly come to me for this now? And what actually happened was, for the last 4 years, his previous employer that he'd had to leave for the treatment had been paying private healthcare for him. And in that last year, they basically said, look, we can't do this anymore. And he had exhausted his funding. Now, my dad wasn't skint. He was not skint at all. He was a very successful salesman. But in those 4 years, him and his missus had tried to have a bit of a life together in case the worst happened. And when he was relying on this money for the treatment, and when that ended, he had very little money to pay for this expensive treatment. And yeah, and I basically, he asked me for money to have back so he could pay for his treatment, and I said no. I said no.
Maybe you weren't to know.
This is my point. This is exactly it. Because that's, in my mind, that's exactly where I go. The whole thing there, any bad feeling that there might have been, any weirdness, was all his decision. The whole thing was his decision. He handled it exactly the way he wanted to handle it. He had a choice at any moment in that time to say, right, fuck it, I need to tell people I've got cancer, I'm probably going to die here. But he didn't. And I think there's probably two aspects to that. I know certainly he didn't, because he didn't want people to treat him any differently, because he was always the head of the family and all that. He took all that idea. Right. He was the oldest brother of, I think there's five of them. Grew up in a tiny house, all done well. He did like the best. So he has that very prideful place, looked after everybody. He took that role of the head of the family.
Imagine it's like bread. Is it like bread?
I'll be absolutely honest, it's exactly like that. That's exactly what it's like.
What's your man's name? Which the main guy? I forgot. Will know.
Yeah, someone will tell us. But yeah, he took that very seriously, and he made the decision that he wasn't going to tell anybody. You know, so even his mum, his brothers, sisters, everybody found out after we did. He told us before anyone. I don't have any
I think there's a lot of sense in being logical about this, about these things. But anyone that I've lost, whether it's the lads that have died on ops or whatever, I've always looked back on those people and tried not to be felt guilty about not spending enough time with them. Mm. But I've often, and I know you and I have talked about this, I've often got emotional out of being so proud of those people.
Yeah.
When Lloydie died, he was flown back into, so we accompanied him back from Afghan, where he was repatriated onto a C-17. C-17 landed. CH-47 then backed up to the C-17. He was cross-decked onto that. We walked in and we were slinging our crikey. We were literally like straight off the ground in the crikey, yeah. Him and mate. And then we flew straight into camp here at the time. I mean, this is obviously quite a few years ago now. Flew straight out of camp. And while we were, you know, the whole time we were there, he was in front of us. We sat with his coffin, me and my mate sat with his coffin, and we were, you know, slagging him off and gobbing off about him like we would, you know. Mm-hmm. And just as we sort of came over camp, we then looked out the window and we saw everyone there. Then we landed and on came a load of guys and their number twos to march them off. And mm-hmm. It fucking hit me like a ton of bricks.
Yeah.
And it hit me because I was so proud of him. I was so proud of you know, this is what everything he's achieved, and these men are dressed as they are for him. Yeah. You know, everything that's going on today is for him, you know. Massively, massively proud. And then, so, I, you know, going back to, you know, what I just said about Tom and other people, you know, other people who are close. And I think you look back, I think I personally, I deal with it with looking at them as an individual, as opposed to the guilt of what I did or haven't done. Because why should I make it about me, really? Do you see what I mean?
It's, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It's, I mean, not me, is it? There's a lot of people love to do that these days. They love to turn things about them.
Yeah.
You know, we saw this recently, unfortunately, in Clapham, and we've seen this on BLM. Mm. We see everything else where people suddenly turn every sad event into... But actually, you know, I think there's a really good opportunity to look back on those individuals' lives and be very proud of what they achieved and what they did.
Yeah. I mean, you can do that. And I mean, I don't know. I think one of the rabbit holes people go down is they try and do things like they think they're meant to. So like that grieving process, it's not the same for everybody. It's not the same for everybody. You know, not everybody is going to cry. Not everybody is going to have it affect them straight away. Some people, it might be a couple of months down the line, something can happen and then suddenly it hits you. There's nothing wrong with any of that. Like, you have to just accept what you, because some of it's a physiological response. So you have to accept what your body wants to do. If your body wants to cry, then you go, well, same as anything else, you cry. But it's the overthinking aspect is where people can really get into trouble. The what ifs and all of those things, what ifs are the most pointless thing in the world. They make no sense whatsoever. You know, a million things could have happened, but they didn't. They didn't happen. You didn't do the things you wanted to do. They did the things that they wanted to do. You know, we're all living our own lives, making the best of it. And you just...
Yeah, a good friend of mine, and I know you know the guy as well, he suffers from guilt. It's a bit like a survivor's type guilt where he swapped out with a guy.
Yeah.
He swapped out on a job with a guy and the guy died on that job.
Yeah.
He has a guilt of that. There are many other issues that he recognizes. However, for a long period of time, he felt that was why he feels that he does. Mm. And these are ways, you know, that butterfly effects, all the other good things that the fact is that was the way the dice rolled. That's what happened. That this is the outcome.
Yep.
And how you deal with it. I agree with you as well, is, you know, dwelling on these things. How do you, I mean, personally, through loss, I remember when we lost Lee Ellis and Rich Holmes, I felt that I couldn't really show too much emotion. However, a lot of empathy with my blokes at the time, because I needed to feel that they had a commander or a, you know, something that was still, you know, we were still on ops, we still had a mission, we still had everything else. And, you know, when I got back, it was actually when I sat down, I remember I was reading the newspaper and it was an article about them. And my missus just looked over and I was, you know, I was crying my eyes out.
Yeah.
And it's, again, it comes down to, I was so proud of those guys. But that's what I was so, you know, I was mourning because it's healthy to mourn.
Yeah.
However, you know, if we'd all just got round and, you know, just, it wouldn't have been a healthy situation for anyone. It wouldn't have been a, you know. And also, to be fair, I didn't feel like it didn't hit me. You know, when Lloydie got brought in on the back of the lifter, I wasn't on the job. I was in a separate job at the time. Mm. But the lads all came in, and then I RV'd with them at the hospital. You know, and it hit a lot of the guys quite early on. And I remember going back, and was the old RSM of Paul, and he was like, "You all right, mate? You know, do you need a bit of time?" I was like, "No, I'm good." you know, I'm all right. And it hadn't hit me, you know, it hadn't dawned on me. And it really hadn't until obviously we were taking him home. But you know, you can't force that out. There isn't this thing. It's almost like it's like a bit of a virtue signaling, isn't it? Sometimes people are overly over the top. But again, you know, everyone deals with it differently.
Totally. And you shouldn't feel like you're forced to do that. Like those, both those situations there, especially the first one with Lee Ellison, that like you're like exactly like you say, you're still doing your job. The correct reaction for you there is that you're now a leader. You have to allow your blokes to do what they need to, but also somebody does have to be that focal point at that point. And it's not that, you know, if you've got to know yourself well enough. So you might have been that really hit you, and you needed to say, "Look, you need to get somebody else in here because I need some time."
This yeah, and fun. I would have gladly done that. Yeah. Well, Chris Titcomb, he was the OC, and he actually came up and he says, "Look, can you come down to the office?" He says, and it was the next day. I think we gave 24-hour rest because this is the first time Tupac had lost anyone since.
Yeah. I remember. I wasn't in then. I remember watching it on the fucking news, mate. Yeah.
And we saw, you know, as in on ops.
Yeah.
I think. Maybe wrong here. Maybe in all nine. I apologize, but it's been a long time anyway.
Yeah.
And Lee was very close to many people in that company, mm-hmm. from his background and you know, just his peer group, and really strong peer group. One of the most amazing things happened. amazing thing happened. So Chris Dickham asked me to come down the office and he said, "Look, Ben, would you take a multiple out, but don't take your own multiple, take volunteers. Mm-hmm. We need to get back out on the ground. We've got to show a presence. Can you go in the block and ask for volunteers, but don't take your own multiple?" I was like, "Yeah, absolutely." Mm-hmm. And so I went up and I said, "Look, guys, you know, no pressure on anyone here. You know, we've got to go back out on the ground. Who wants to go?" And all of his best mates put their hand up. Every single one of his best mates put their hand up. Now, there were, you know, a couple of people who weren't his best mates, but were affected by the situation, mm-hmm. And they didn't want to go. But they needed more time. They're human beings, you know, they needed more time. But his best mates all said, "Look, we want to go. This is important to us, and we mm-hmm. want to." And the amount of abuse that they took on the ground from locals who were mm-hmm. taunting them because of they'd known what the situation was. And these guys stood fast and did their job. That, again, fucking hit me.
Yeah.
Because what an amazing bunch of paratroopers to do that.
Yeah.
You know, okay, respectfully for later tours, I'm talking about a tour that isn't necessarily kinetic.
Yeah.
Is a very frustrating tour where you're not necessarily getting the rounds down.
Yeah.
You are very much a policing kind of presence, where, you know, you can't just get into a firefight and let some things out of your system. So, you know, absolutely amazing. Hats off to these lads. Just how fucking awesome, you know, they are. You know, and that's absolutely, you know, should be put back on Lee and Rich Holmes themselves for how awesome those guys were. But that's how they dealt with it. And then afterwards, obviously, they mourned and did what they needed to do. And some people are still, you know, mourning that now, mm-hmm. you know. But again, for me, it's just so proud. I mean, these are the moments that I cherish them.
Yeah.
You know, if you know what I mean, mother?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Really cool. Obviously we proper melancholy there for anyone who's listening still, I'd be interested to know people, you know, coming back and reflecting on theirs, you know, and, you know, we're all in this together really, aren't we? You know, we're all in this sort of,
but it's the one thing that's definitely going to happen to all of us. You know what I mean? It's like, Jack, you miss people when they're gone. You miss them, but the way I sort of think about it is this: So if you're religious, okay, let's say you believe, you're religious, you believe in heaven, then they're, you know, you're not going to believe that your loved ones go to hell, are you? So, you know, if they're gone, then they're in heaven and they're fine. If you don't believe in any of that and you believe that you just you die and that's it, then they don't know. You don't know you're dead. So the only person sort of taking any hit on it is you, if you let it keep eating at you. You know, their life's finished. They did what they did, and it's done. And they're either up in heaven laughing at us because we got fucking COVID, or there's nothing. It's exactly like it was before you were born, and there's nothing. So
that isn't depressing. You know, you've got
no. It's not. It's not depressing at all.
Because I feel the same as you. I mean, you know, I feel the same as you. However, you know, we you know, if people are still talking about these people, we're talking about, I've just spoke about four people.
Exactly.
Wow. I mean, you know, amazing people, you know, this is how you know, you legends, absolute legends, every single one of them.
Yeah. But you also shouldn't feel guilty if you forget someone, as in not completely forget, but you shouldn't go down rabbit holes because you realize, fucking hell, it's the anniversary of so-and-so dying yesterday. They didn't remember. I see guys doing that all the time.
Yeah, I went to Simo's grave 3 days early. I was like, I went there and I was like, right, I've got to remember this. I have to remember this. So, and I always go, right, I know it's my birthday then. I'm going to go then. And I'm definitely going to go because last year I couldn't. I was up in London. And I felt really bad about it. So I was like, right, I'm definitely, because I'm shit when it comes to remembering stuff.
So am I.
And so I turned up and I was like, okay, cool. You know, it's nice to, you know, in the graveyard seeing the graves of my old, you know, friends, you know, tip my hat and stuff. And I looked at the date and I was like, that's not for another 3 days. But, you know, regardless, you know, absolutely regardless, the point is it's important whether you go to a grave or whether you acknowledge them in some way, even if it's just, you know, you have a thought or they're in someone's conversation.
Yeah,
you know,
I just think that my point is that you shouldn't feel guilty for getting on with your life.
No.
Because imagine, would you want people to be fucking moping about you? Or would you want them to be taking the piss out of you and remembering all the fucking stupid things you did and getting on with their life and being happy? You know, and to an extent, depending on the circumstance, that's what they died for.
Of course, yeah.
You know what I mean? So, you know, you've got to... Yeah.
Very good point. Very good point. Well, let's be interested to hear anyone's thoughts on.
Well, I'm sure there'll be plenty. I'm sure there'll be plenty on this one. Yeah. It's one of those ones, isn't it?
Yeah. What else you got, Gaz?
Fucking not much, to be honest. I am doing a thing. Do you know what Clubhouse is?
Yeah, it's that Mickey Mouse thing that I said before. We're Goofy, aren't we?
Mickey Mouse thing, Goofy.
Mickey Mouse Clubhouse. Is that the... What is a Clubhouse? Go on, talk to me. I've got kids. No.
It's that audio app thing. Do you know what it is?
Okay, yeah. I remember you talked to me about it before. Yeah, it sounds pretty good. It's where... It's an interactive thing, isn't it?
Yeah. So I finally... It's invite only. A couple of days ago, I finally got an invite onto it. And it's fucking mental. It's like... Imagine...
So the way it's like a Michael Barrymore pool party. what is it?
Imagine LinkedIn, but audio. Okay. So everyone's on there. Everyone's on there big time, isn't it? Telling you how fucking mega they are.
That's what LinkedIn is all about, yeah.
Yeah. Everyone's saying how, you know, they in their bios, they have this big list of accomplishments. Like everyone's an influencer. Everyone's an entrepreneur. Everyone's a fucking Asian investor. Everyone's fucking this and that.
Everyone's got their skill at arms. Badge on their sleeve.
100%, mate. It's fucking crackers. And it's run really weird. So you get, it's, when you log into it, it's, you sort of enter a room and the rooms are like, it's like listening to a phone call. So there's people who are up on the stage, right? And they're the moderators. They're the people having the conversation. If you just come into the room, you're just in the audience and you can't talk, you can only listen. So what you can do is you press a button, and that raises your hand. And then one of the moderators can go, oh, Ben wants to say something. And what they do is they bring you up onto the stage by letting you, they turn your mic on, and then you're allowed to talk and make your points. And then when you're finished talking, you disappear back into the audience. It's fucking weird because it's like its own little world. They have like their own language on there. Like when you finish talking, so if I'm chatting away and I've brought up onto the stage and I've said my bit and I go, when I finish talking, I say, I'm Gaz and I've finished speaking. And they all do that. And they all
sounds
talk
like
about,
spoof.
It's fine. Yeah, that's exactly what it's like. Yeah, it's kind of like that. Yeah. But it's all about bringing value. So they, you know, like in, you know, after a brief where all the officers wait to put their hand up and ask a bone question and pretty much just repeat what's just been said, but try and put their own spin
buzzword
on it.
Yeah. Essentially, strategic.
Yeah.
Something. Like
buzzwords, exactly. But it's all sort of sales based and marketing based and motivational based. Use the buzzwords, pretty much rephrase what's just been said and try and make it sound like your idea. That's what it's like. It's fucking crazy. So I was talking to Hugh Keir and Rich Sharp, React guy.
Good guys. Well,
yeah, good guys. I said, look, should we have a bit of fun with this? Are you on this? Should we have a bit of fun with this? So what we're doing as a bit of a response to the fakeness of the, is we're doing a thing where we go 8:30 every morning. We go on and we just have a chat. We go on and chat. One of us leads the room and we pick a news story or whatever just to spark it off, and we'll talk about what, you know, our opinions of it. We did the first one this morning and it was quite good. So yeah, that's what I've been doing. So we're doing that every weekday at 8:30.
Okay, so what are you achieving out of this?
Fuck all, apart from having a laugh and doing a bit of a fight back again.
What do you think? Is it productive? Is it a good idea? And are people benefiting from it? Or is this more of a platform for people just to gob off about how great they are?
I know, I get it right. So it's mainly that. So you can't monetize the app itself. You can't monetize. There's no way of making money off it other than using it as top of funnel. So you go on there, you chat, you try and get people to be inspired by you, or you bring them some value, and then they look in your bio and maybe they'll buy the course that you're selling, or they'll have a look on your website. So if they think you're a good guy, they'll go, well, what's this they're talking about? That's kind of how it works. But because of that, the conversations all just eventually spin round to what the person's got to say so they can push you in the direction of what they're trying to sell.
Understood.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's entertaining. I'm me, Hugh, and Richard on there for a laugh. I've got a spare invitation if you'd like to come on. But I asked Luke today and he turned me down. He's like, fuck that.
Yeah.
You probably like it because it's all networking.
I'm actually, I am getting involved with something, I think next week, doing some kind of, not like like a TED kind of talk type thing.
Are you going to talk about functional fitness again?
That was actually really good.
It was really good. I took the piss out a little bit, but it was. I watched the whole thing and it was good.
I mean, you know, you got to be realistic, and you know, we're sort of targeting or aiming at, you know, everyday people. We're not totally. you know that's what it's, you know, we've all got their own issues and got their own troubles. So but yeah, the TED thing, I'm looking forward to it. It's it's quite constructive. It's not about it's not like the typical kind of check me out, I'm an influencer telling you a load of inspirational quotes and all that sort of stuff. I'm not going to tell you about how depressing my life is and how I've turned it around. I think there's some really structured things where, you know, like kind of exactly like we do with our social media groups that, you know, you, me and the Contact Coffee guys and Stoic guys are on, where there's lots of really good helping points where we, so yeah, hopefully I should learn a fair bit out of it.
Oh, so you're receiving, not giving.
Well, a bit of both. Well, okay. I think I'm, you know, typically I'm sending, not receiving. But I think I will probably receive quite a lot out of it because, you know,
okay,
you know, that's, it should be good. I'm looking forward to it. Yeah.
Cool, man. There is absolutely an appetite. And this is kind of what this fight back thing we're doing on Clubhouse is. There is an appetite for people who are genuine and are talking about not some magic solution, talking about just daily normal lives and, you know, fuck ups and all that stuff. Because people are tired of it. People are tired of the influencer thing. They're tired. They see through it fucking straight away now. Obviously, there's a bracket of fucking solid people who haven't seen through it. But the general public basically know when they're being sold to, know when they're being lied to, know when they're seeing something fake. And you're just better off just being yourself and hoping that people, to an extent, like you and think you're a decent person.
And obviously, if you're struggling with, this is what I hope this is going to be about. I hope it's going to be I've struggled to do this and this, for a number of reasons. A, I'm not very good at this sort of thing.
Yeah.
B, I don't have this network, and C, you know, I'm not in a position to, etc. So what I'm kind of hoping is that it's going to be more of a, you know, a real learning thing for everyone, where you actually find the answers to you know, to your problems. Because, you know, these influencers, you know, they're living these sort of made up great lives, or even these great lives that they're being paid to have.
Yeah.
But actually the average man isn't going to have that.
No.
But they still need the answers to certain problems so they can achieve what they need to do at the end of the day. So, kind of cool.
That should be good. Tell me how it goes.
The anti-influencer.
That's it, man.
What is an anti? Uninfluential?
Uninfluential. Who knows, mate? We need another buzzword. I think that's pretty much it, man. We've done an hour and a half, pretty much.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. I suppose I've had a bit of tea. I think there's some bit of salmon left at home.
A little bit of salmon. Yeah. I need to go and make some. I've got to go to the shops on the way home. Yeah. Right, here you go. Is this just my relationship, or did normal people do this, or everybody else do this? Right. Fucking brief story. I went home this afternoon. My missus working from home. I took the dogs out for a walk. One of my Pomeranians, because she's fucking solid, sprinted headfirst into a fucking fence and scratched her eyeball. So we had to go to the vets this afternoon. So me and my missus got in the car, went to the vets. While she's in the vets, I say, right, there's a Marks and Spencer's there. Like, right, I'm going to pop to Marks and Spencer's to get some food. She says, do you need anything? No, actually, I need some fucking coffee mate and some toilet roll, right? I was like, okay, there's an Aldi back there. She wants to go to Aldi. Right, we'll go to Aldi. Get back in the car. We drive the 200 meters to Aldi. She then pretty much fucking refuses to go into the shops. She's like, well, you go. I'm like, but we're going for you. The stuff's for you. Like, we weren't going to go to the shops unless it's for you. So why am I suddenly now going? Is that just me?
No. But you're not going to win this.
Won't win it, but I'm infuriated because I've now got to go to the shops on the way home and get all the things that she wanted because she was 50 metres from the door of fucking Aldi, wouldn't get out the car. In fact, I'm talking absolute shit. She got out the car. She went in to look for the things she wanted, didn't have the things she wanted, and came out and didn't get my stuff that I asked for. Out of principle.
You know what you should have done? I would have left the fucking Pomeranian somewhere.
I can't do that. I'm in love with it.
Oh, really?
I love it. Yeah. Well, anyway, that's what I'm doing. I'm going home. I'm going to go to the shops on the way home and get all the things that she wants and I want, because obviously I've lost that battle. Fuck's sake, mate.
Coffee mate. All right, cool. Listen, mate, really good to see you.
Same, dude.
Coffee mates.
I don't even fucking use it. Painful.
I know. It's fucking disgusting stuff.
It's disgusting stuff. Fucking hell.
Right. Yeah. Hey, good to see you, mate. Listen, obviously we're going to miss tomorrow's, and then look forward to having a chat next week. Let's get catch up over the weekend anyway.
Roger.
And see whenever you're free, and we'll get catch up.
Okay, dude.
Cheers, awesome. Everyone who was listening. Thank you. Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
See you. See you in a bit, mate.
Later, bro. All the best.
Bye-bye.